This is Dare to Be Authentic Talk Radio Worldwide with relationship coach, life coach, and author Mari Mitchell, broadcasting live from Southern California.
Hi, and welcome to Dare to Be Authentic Radio. I'm your host, Mari Mitchell, and I'm so glad to be here with you today. I have a very special guest today, Sylvester Boyd Jr. is going to be talking about how we are all members of the human race and should be respected as such. Sylvester is a historian, a background actor who has appeared in hundreds of TV episodes and several movies, and he's an author. His first novel, The Road to Money, is based on two stories from 1925 to 1937 told to him by several family members raised in Money, Mississippi. And his second book is called The Road from Money, The Journey Continues, which was released in November 2017 and taking place in Chicago's Bronzeville community from 1937 to 1955. Welcome to the show, Sylvester. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Maury, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. So tell us a little bit about the story of how you became an author.
Well, it's a long story and a short story all wrapped in one. The story starts out in Money, Mississippi. I don't know whether you know anything about Money, Mississippi. It was the birthplace of the Civil Rights Movement. Emmett Till was killed, a young boy of 14 years old, and he was killed and thrown in the Tallahatchie River, which flows through Money, Mississippi. And that sort of started the Civil Rights Movement. That was in the year 1955. So that was pre-Martin Luther King, and that's sort of the birthmark of the touchstone of the Civil Rights Movement.
Wow. I didn't know that, Money, Mississippi. Wow. So I know that you're a historian, so you have a great interest in history.
Well, I love history. History, to me, I don't know how to breathe without it. The more I got into the subject, the more relevant it became. And, of course, history has a bearing on everything we do, but I don't think in the United States we take it very seriously. I think our high school and college students should be required to take a certain amount of history, not just history of America, but history of world history, and you should also study history of other peoples. I had to study Mexican-American, Spanish-American history, Asian-American history, and also studied Asian history. So you get once you study history, you can get connections that you don't get otherwise. I'm an extensive traveler, and when I travel to different countries, by knowing some of the history and the traditions and the customs and the architecture of the area, you get a different sense than just if you were a tourist that got on the ship and went somewhere and had no perspective of what was there and what the people were like. So before I go, I have a history in my head of the – I just got back from Cuba, for example. And, I lived in a Cuban Missile Crisis. I remember when Castro was in the hills of San Diego province down there, and before Castro came to power, but it was Batista. So when I landed in Cuba, that all came rushing back to me. Who was what and what was where. And believe it or not, the picture I had in my head was pretty close to what I saw.
Interesting. Most people don't realize how run down. And, I am Cuban, and my family's from Cuba, so I know a lot about it.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Very good. So tell us a little bit about how the first novel, The Road for Money, why were you inspired to write it, and how did it develop for you?
I was inspired to write it because of the people in my life, my grandmother, my aunt, and it really is a story of my aunt's life, her journey through life. To make a long story short, she went from the cotton fields of Money, Mississippi, to a millionaire in Chicago, the Bronzeville area. So that, I thought, was a very interesting story. I had never written before, but I'm one of these people that I feel that somebody else has done it. I was always trained and when I was younger and told and taught by my parents and relatives that if anybody else has done it and you want to do it, you can do it too. You just have to acquire the proper amount of education to do that. Mm-hmm. So I started to write, In the story started in Money, Mississippi, on the banks of the Tallahassee River, and it opens with a cart, a mule-drawn cart coming into town. And that's where it opened, and it went through the great migration of Negroes from the South to the North. It covered World War II. My aunt was, she built some of the engines for, helped build some of the engines for planes at a factory here in Chicago. So it's very interesting. She bought two apartment buildings, and she worked all the time. She didn't just have apartment buildings, but she actually saved all the money from her checks on her job, which gave her a foot up, so to speak. She could just pile the checks into the bank, and so she accumulated quite a bit of wealth. So the picture of her in the hot sun picking cotton and then traveling all the world, when she was 79 years old, she went to Vietnam and Southeast Asia on a cruise. She inspired me and my interest in travel. So that's what got the story. And I figured if the story is to be told, then I should tell it. And hopefully it rings good with a lot of people. They look at it and they see my aunt come to life. I definitely have done it. As I write, I actually can feel my ancestors, and I can actually feel some of the things she went through. She was like a mother to me, a second mother, so I have a pretty good insight into her life, especially in the later years of the book, not in the early years because I didn't live in Money, Mississippi. Matter of fact, I've never been to Money, Mississippi. It's just the descriptions that were passed down to me from earlier generations.
Okay. Wow. It's beautiful because it's also meant to your family, to her courage. It's a history, not only American history, but a history of your family as well. It's really a beautiful thing. Love it. So go ahead.
Yeah, American history is just like I said before. History is made up of what people have done, when they did it, and how they did it, and sometimes why they did it. It tells why we get into wars. It tells quite a few things about us. Right now, we're going through a very difficult period in history, but history tends to repeat itself. You know, a lot of things that happened in the United States today are very similar to 1935 Nazi Germany or just prior to World War II. I see a lot of similarities. I see a lot of things that take me right back to that time. By me knowing what happened then, I get a clear picture of what's happening now. History always has repeated, because human beings tend to make the same mistakes over and over again. We learn from them, then a few generations later, we're right back where we started from. The same thing that got us into World War II kind of gets you into other wars after that. You know, and we have to be familiar with history to know who we really are. And I don't mean just European history, because that's what's taught in American schools. But history, America is made up of so many different cultures and it's very diverse, but we tend to get only one slanted view of history in high school and college. I was fortunate that I majored in history and I have a pretty good background for knowing everybody's history. The American Indians very much fascinated me, the Plains and the Cherokee and the Crow and the Creek and the Pawnee and the Sioux, the military battles they fought. You know, but we don't get that, because then if we give them too much humanization, then it doesn't tend to make Europeans look too good. So history, I took a course once called History's Omissions, and boy, do we have a lot of our history omitted. And when you deprive one group of their history, you can't deprive anyone of history without, because history is true. It's a one true thing. What you did is what you did. Now, you can slant it, you can turn it, you can mend it, you can twist it, but what you did is comes right back to what you really did. It's like lies and truth. Something either is truthful or it's a lie.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you. I love history, and I didn't major in history, but I went beyond what they taught me. Well, I went to a private school, so we got a lot more history than the normal, you know, person would get. And we've got a lot of world history and also ancient history. And like you say, you learn a lot of things about how people did things, why they did things, and maybe how people should do things today. What do you think, what lesson do you think history has for us that we can use right now during these pandemic times?
Don't blindly follow a leader. Don't blindly follow a leader. People, somewhere in history, I forget who exactly said, we get the government we deserve. People get the government that they deserve. Don't just take what a leader says and run with it, because leaders have their own motives, good or bad. They have their own motives. And a lot of people have followed leaders blindly. If you know anything about, I'm a military historian as well, you know anything about how wars get started, it's generally because you give too much power to the wrong people. And that can happen in any society at any time. And, you know, there's all different forms of government, communism, capitalism. You know, you got all kinds of forms of government. But all of them can be abused, just like anything else. Government, somebody has to run the society. But you have to be real careful about who you allow to run your society. Basically, I think even in the United States today, that's a good lesson to learn. I think we haven't given power to the proper people. And I'm one for term limiting everybody in our society today. I think power given too long will always corrupt to a certain extent. That's just my personal opinion. I always felt that the Supreme Court, for example, and this is something before the current time, I remember in college talking about the Supreme Court, and that I always felt that justices should be have a term of anywhere from 7 to 14 years. It's long enough, and then move along. Then it allows different blood to come into the court, different ideas, different thoughts, and it keeps people from kind of putting one viewpoint, because we're stuck the way our system is right now. You put somebody in for life, that person can be in for 40 years. I mean, it's sort of a not the best, I don't think, for the society as a whole. But because we've always done it, we always do it. And I am one that thinks that we should have more conventions. You should have a Constitution convention once every 50 years. The Constitution itself is a great document. But there should be amendments, and there should be changes, and things should sunset, because the world keeps changing rapidly. And what John Adams did back in the 1700s has little bearing on what we do now, in a way. But the first 10, you know, the Bill of Rights and all that is a great document. I admire the people that did that. But it had a lot of shortcomings. All men are created equal, endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights. And we did not live up to that, and we haven't lived up to that, and that's causing problems to this day, because we have never gotten it right. I always say that America has never been a just society, but one day it hasn't. It's treated its women differently. White males have always been at the top of the hierarchy, and we are coming to reckon with some of these things right now. Until you straighten the thing, my grandmother used to tell me, if you plant a crooked seed, you'll get a crooked plant, which then will bear crooked fruit. So we kind of started with slavery, which was not a good thing to start with.
Right, right. No, absolutely right. I agree with everything you've said. So what role do you think authenticity plays in this for all of us, for yourself and for all of us?
Well, for me, being who I am, knowing who I am, you know, authenticity is, I think, if I remember right, means to be genuine, not fake, not phony, be real. That's what it means to me, the word authenticity. Not to try to make yourself into what others want you to be, but be who you are and to know who you are. And I think that can apply to a country. A country should be who it is and know who it is. And I think right now we're kind of trying to find out who we really are. Are we a country that's fair and just to all of our citizens? Are we a country that's elitist and just have the people at the top that get all the benefits? Are we a country that is fair to our workers and give them honest days pay for an honest day's work? Or do we give people $1 billion? Some people in the United States, businessmen, have more wealth than some small nations. That is pathetic. And we all have enough money. There's enough money to go around. There's enough wealth to go around. It is the unequal distribution of our wealth that makes the problem. And we're getting further and further and further from what should be reality. When I was a kid, I can remember, my dad could go to work or my stepdad could go to work and they could make an honest living that would take care of a family. Then it got to be where, the ladies have to go to work. And now it's a two-income family. And now a two-income family can't do it. So we're getting further and further from what we should be and who we should be. I think I don't have anything against millionaires. They have their place. But millionaires should not squeeze out the small people, because to get to be a millionaire, you need the small people at the base of the tree.
Right. Very well said. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And if you want to call in and ask Sylvester a question, you can call 929-477-3869. That's 929-477-3869. You can start calling now, and we'll be right back.
Want more out of life? Frustrated, wondering why you feel empty? Marriage lacking connection? Burned out, struggling with depression, anxiety, alcohol, drugs? I've had high levels of success and paid the price, so you don't have to. Go to www.jonathanmather.com to get my free guide to being your best self in times of uncertainty, or call 323-248-0350 for a free consultation.
Inspiring new author Lisa Borges shares her story in her debut book. Pick up a copy of Life in the Fat Lane and read intimate details of her personal struggles and triumphs. With raw emotion, honesty, and even a little humor, she tells stories of things we all think but nobody wants to talk about. Pick up your copy of Life in the Fat Lane today, available on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or email storiesbylisab@yahoo.com for more information.
Have we been lied to by the church? This question and more are answered in Scandal in the Shadows, where you will discover something unbelievably incredible has been happening in the Catholic Church, although most of the laity have never even heard about it. As the history of our church comes out, the lies of deception will finally end. Get your copy of Scandal in the Shadows at yourradicaltruth.com. That's yourradicaltruth.com.
What is holding you back from living the life you deserve? Has life handed you lemons? Do you feel sour and stuck? Stop living in the past. In Susan Wheeler's new book, The Lemonade Diet, she will show you how to let things go, embrace the new normal, and create a winning mindset. Go to SusanBWheeler.com or Amazon for your copy today. Learn more about Susan at SusanBWheeler.com.
We're back on Dare to Be Authentic Radio. I'm your host, Mari Mitchell, with special guest Sylvester Boyd Jr. He's talking about how we are all members of the human race and to be respected as such. So, Sylvester, what do you believe is the main message that you want to bring to the public today?
The main message I'd like to transmit is that we should respect. It is one of... This is a big capital R on respect for me. If we respect one another, half of our problems on the planet would disappear. I just totally believe that. It is disrespect that causes the problems on our planet. We disrespect your friends or your neighbors. Disrespect always leads to resentment. Disrespect, resentment. I may not say I resent what you're doing, but I do resent it. It's just a human impulse. For example, if I step on your toe and I don't apologize, I've disrespected you. But if I apologize, then I'm giving you a modicum of respect. And generally, that works wonders for making things run smooth. Resentment leads to wars. It leads to discontentment. For example, right now in our streets, we have Black Lives Matter going on. That is a lot of resentment built up over, I believe, like 401 years, if I'm correct historically. You have people, the Indians on reservations, they have a certain amount of resentment. During World War II, the Asians were put in internment camps. They were American citizens with all the rights of American citizens, but they were rounded up and put into internment camps. And also, the Asian citizens built the railroads across the West. So America has built a lot of resentment in its minority groups over the years. It just has. It's natural. It's normal. And I believe it's pretty much proper to resent when you're disrespected. So I think we have to wrestle with that. And I always say we will get to the place we're supposed to get when white America takes a look at the real history of our country and how we got to where we are. I think a lot of things are straightened out. You got to be able to see yourself in a mirror and admit that you have done some wrongs, and then say, I'm willing to correct that wrong or those wrongs, those evils. And until you do that, we're going to keep going down this path. What we're doing now is not working. It hasn't worked. We keep doing the same things and expecting to get a different answer, and that's the definition of insanity.
Yes, absolutely. You know, thank you for mentioning things that most people don't know about, how the Asians were all rounded up during the war and put in internment camps, and nobody talks too much about the American Indians, or Native Americans as they're called now, that were put into reservations, you know, supposedly for their own good. A lot of this doesn't get talked about, but America does have a history, like you said, a history of putting minorities away somewhere. And we still have a history of women, and I'm a woman, being disrespected, not being paid properly, not being, not getting the promotions, et cetera. So it's a huge problem, and I'm saying COVID to bring it to the light. So thank you so much for that. Let's talk a little bit about your new book, The Road to Money, The Journey Continues. Tell us a little bit about what that covers.
Well, that's a that's really getting to be a, my second book. My third book will be in that series, will be released sometime in November. Yeah, so I'm wrapping up another book. So The Road for Money, The Journey Continue is, you know, it's like a child that I birthed, and it's a little ways back, and I got another one coming on. But, you know, The Journey Continues is basically the great migration, of, as I alluded to earlier, of African-Americans from the South to the North. It covers the journey coming on the train. You know, they couldn't sit in the seats with white passengers until they hit the Mississippi River, I believe. And I always thought that was a funny thing. You can go across a barrier and all of a sudden everything changed. They came from the South and all of a sudden they're in the North. And now you can sit next to a white person. And I think in one of the little passages in the book, on a page in a chapter, a white lady sitting next to my aunt, and she was very shocked, you know, those types of things. We built a society around those types of indignities. It talks about her going into a department store here in downtown Chicago, and she was picking out a coat, and the sales help there made little snide comments about, are you sure you can afford this? Why are you here? Those types of things that are little indignities that happen to minorities. I'm not going to say just black. I'm sure Hispanics have some of the similar stories to tell. We have disrespected people, and disrespect has become commonplace. It is part of who we are, and that's why we have such a problem with race in America, because it's been hardwired into our teachings, our learnings, our thinking, our understanding. But it's real simple. If you really want to know what screens it out, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's simple. If you do that, this all goes away. But to think that one human being is better than another human being, there's no such thing as a better human being. It's just a human being that happens to be in a circumstance at a certain place at a certain time. And we are all, when you think about it, the fact that I'm talking to you right now is very special. Because I could have been born in 1850 or something, I would have been here and gone. So we're all in a special place. It's like classes going through a school. You know, you're a junior, a freshman, a sophomore, kindergartner, and each class goes through the same process. We all individually go through the same system. We all born, we all live, we all die. There's no difference in that. I have never seen a transparent person yet that you could see through that was clearly didn't have a color to a skin or a texture of skin over them. Skin covers the body. It's the largest organ of the body. Mm-hmm. But that should be it. It shouldn't be anything other than that. It doesn't mean you're smart because it got a little darker color, and there's a reason for that. That's an adaptation to the environment. You go to North Pole, you see a polar bear. What color? He's white. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's simple. It's an adaptation to the environment that he comes from. If you go to Canada, you see a real light woods, you know, near pines. If you go to the jungle, the Amazon, you're going to get teak and mahogany and dark wood. Nature has a way of adjusting us to our climate. But because we moved around and we got airplanes, ships, boats, and trains, now we all scramble up. But originally, we all were adapted to the climate. Our color was adapted to the environment that we lived in. As simple as that. And all this foolishness about one group being better than another and one group being afraid of skin color and all of that, as long as we do that, we're going to have problems. It's never going to be accepted by the people who are being oppressed by that. And it shouldn't be accepted.
No, it should not. So what do you believe, Sylvester, is one thing that we as individuals to improve the conditions in our country? All the things that you're talking about.
We as individuals, we can, number one, learn as much as we can about other people other than people that look like us. I'm an African American. I should know something about an Asian American. And I have. I went to school in Chinatown, 22nd and State, if you know anything about Chicago, but it's Chinatown. I went to school in Chinatown. Some of my best friends were Asian. My background lent me as an individual to have lived in all different environments. I've lived in all African-American setting. I've lived in a mixed American setting. And when I went through high school, I only had about maybe 5% of my class in my school was African-American. Most of my classmates were white. So that gave me a different insight to that most people will never get in America because we segment and segregate and don't talk to one another frankly and honestly. The thing is that goes back to authenticity. We tend to put a false face on who we really are and our real feelings. They only come to the surface when something requires them to come to the surface. So, that gives us false images of ourselves. And the other thing is I think people should look at the radio program, the TV program, and see what you're really seeing. For most of my life, even as a kid, I used to look at TV, and I used to say, well, why are the white guys always the cavalry? They're always the savior. You know, when I was a little boy, I said, Tarzan, he's in Africa. Why would he not be black? You know, those type of... When I was a kid, I never even saw an image of a mannequin being black. So history, we omit a lot of things, and we paint false images. If you look at the heroes in most of our movies up until recently and still going on, you don't see a Spanish-American male being the hero in a story. We just don't. We have to get away from that. It's passé, and any intelligent person can look at it and see what they're seeing. And America has to, it's like a reckoning that we're going to have in a conversation also.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. Well, we're just about out of time, so make sure to go look at Sylvester's website. It's www.boydbooks.net. So BOYDBOOKS.net. That's where you can get both of his books. But remember, the new one is coming out in November, very soon. And you can also find him on my website, lifecoachmari.com. That's lifecoachmari.com. Just click on my radio show page, and he's already there. With his picture, a link to his website, and also a link to his Instagram. I hope that you can check it out. very, very timely. It's perfect for these times. Augusta, thanks so much for being on the show. It's a pleasure having you today. And thank you for listening to Dare to Be Authentic Radio, and catch us next time. Bye for now.
Thanks for having me.
It was my pleasure.
This is Dare to Be Authentic Talk Radio Worldwide with relationship coach, life coach, and author Mari Mitchell, broadcasting live from Southern California.